Anya kept the binoculars trained on the crews of the approaching patrol boats. She could see several automatic weapons, a couple of Russian Kalashnikovs and an Israeli Uzi, and a smattering of handguns. Those without firearms were carrying makeshift weapons of all kinds, from clubs with nails driven through them to machetes, their blades gleaming in the sunlight. As if the presence of the weapons weren't bad enough, several of the men carried coils of rope looped over their shoulders, and from where she stood, Anya could see that at least one of those ropes ended in a steel grappling hook.
Oh my God.
She knew a boarding party when she saw one. Anya was just about to let Vargas know what she was seeing when she spotted a man in the lead boat raise his automatic rifle and pointed in the direction of the Pride's bridge.
Get down!
Anya threw herself at Captain Vargas. Anya curled up against one of the bridge consoles. Nearby, she could see Captain Vargas doing the same. Unfortunately, not everyone who was on the bridge had heeded her warning. One of Vargas's crewmen lay on the deck, eyes open and staring, blood pumping weakly from the hole in his neck. Anya stayed where she was, waiting. Vargas didn't wait. She yanked Vargas back down to the deck. If the gunman had simply run out of bullets, he might start shooting again as soon as he swapped out the gun's magazine. And she didn't want either of them to be caught in the open when he did. Keeping as much of herself below the edge of the bridge controls as possible, Anya peeked out the now shattered window. The pirates' boats were approaching on the port side of their bow. The men aboard were brandishing their weapons, no doubt thinking they'd already won the battle.
I don't think so.
Anya intended to show them there was a lot more fight left in this opponent than they'd ever imagined. She glanced around for a particular item she knew was near and saw Captain Vargas trying to get to his feet again.
Keep your head down!
What do they want?
I'd say the ship, just a guess.
My ship? They wouldn't dare!
I'm afraid they would.
Anya knew that she and the rest of the crew would either be killed outright or kept alive just long enough for the kidnappers to receive a ransom for the stolen ship. In order to survive this thing, they had to keep from getting captured. That meant keeping the pirates off the ship for as long as possible. All this flashed through Anya's thoughts in an instant, helping her make up her mind. She turned and headed across the room toward the bridge's door.
Wait! Where are you going?
Someone's gotta stop us from being boarded, right?
It would be only moments before the two boats were alongside one another. Anya hurried over to the steep set of stairs leading down to the main deck. Just as she reached the main deck, she ran into Claire and Marcos coming up the steps from below.
What's going on?
Pirates.
But what do we do?
Keep them from getting on board, no matter what. If they do, we're all in even more danger than we're in right now.
How?
Are you or any of your men armed?
No. Well, we're carrying a pair of rifles as part of the expedition's gear, but both of them are packed away with the rest of the supplies. It would take time to dig them out.
Anya had her sword, and she wouldn't hesitate to use it when the time came, but it wasn't going to do them much good against armed opponents. They needed something to keep the pirates at a distance. If they were close enough for Anya to need her sword, then she and the others aboard the Neptune's Pride had already lost. As the patrol boats nearly reached them, Anya's gaze fell upon the glass-fronted case mounted on the side of the ship. Inside was a long-handled axe and yards of coiled fire hose.
Help me! Quickly!
Anya didn't have time to locate the key, so she lifted one booted foot. Reaching inside, she grabbed the axe and tossed it to Claire, who snatched it out of midair. Anya then grabbed the front of the fire hose.
Marcos, take this over to the side of the boat.
Marcos didn't ask any questions, did just as he was told, trusting that she had a plan. The plan was simple. Anya intended to wait until the pirates were getting ready to throw the grappling lines she'd seen in their hands. Just before the lines were thrown, she and Marcos were going to pop up into view, holding the fire hose between them, and hit them with a blast of high-pressure water, knocking the pirates off their feet. She hoped. Anya chanced a quick look over the side, knowing that they had to time this right if it was going to work. Her glance showed her one of the patrol boats sliding in toward them, while the second hung back by 50 feet or so. The pirates standing in the bow of the first boat had spread out slightly, their weapons slung over their shoulders or resting on the deck at their feet as they prepared to use the boarding lines in their hands.
No!
The water hit the pirates at about knee level, knocking them right off their feet. At least two were knocked overboard without even knowing what had hit them. In response to the unexpected attack, the patrol boat carrying the would-be boarders veered sharply away from the Pride's hull. Claire grasped the lever controlling the water flow and shut it off again, allowing Anya and Marcos to drop back down below the waist-high bulkhead beside them, out of view of the pirates. Anya and Marcos grinned at each other. Score one for the good guys. The pirates weren't going to give up easily, however. Bullets hit the rail next to Marcos and Anya, and the bulkhead where Claire crouched. Thankfully, the men in the boats were not schooled in tactics, which they demonstrated by emptying their magazines at the spot where Anya and Marcos had been hiding. The pair were no longer there, however. Anya and Marcos had crawled about 15 feet or so away from their last position, dragging the fire hose behind them. Claire hit the water controls. This time, they knocked a man off the roof of the wheelhouse and even managed to shatter the glass in the wheelhouse windows before the boats veered off a second time. It was at that point that the pirates made what Anya hoped would prove to be a fatal mistake. Glancing over the side for a split second, Anya saw one of the patrol boats race away from the other boat, headed toward the prow of the expedition ship. With the engines capable of producing almost three times as much horsepower as the Neptune's Pride, the patrol boat shot ahead of the larger vessel and then crossed over in front of it. She realized that the pirates were splitting their forces, hoping to come at them from two sides. By doing so, they might succeed in getting men aboard in one location or the other before Anya and her compatriots could stop them.
They're headed for the opposite side. Can you hold them off here, Marcos?
As long as they don't get smart and coordinate their climbing and firing efforts, yeah. What about you?
I'll hold them off on the other side. Hopefully by then the captain will have called in the Coast Guard or something.
Out here? Good luck with that.
Where is Vargas? Is he all right?
Anya pointed to the bridge above them.
He was all right when I left him. Can't say the same for one of the other guys, though.
Staying as low as she could, Anya raced down the length of the boat until she came to one of the cross corridors. Anya felt one of the pirate's bullets burn its way across the back of her calf, but then she was through. She ran down the corridor, praying none of the crew suddenly showed up and opened a door in her path as she raced for the one at the far end. Thankfully, none did. Reaching the other side, she hauled down on a lever to open the door, but kept it from doing so with her other hand. She didn't want to yank open the door and instantly give away her position to the pirates, who had no doubt reached this side of the ship by now. Instead, she slowly opened the door a few inches, peering out through the crack. The patrol boat was just now coming up alongside the ship. Anya quickly realized that it must have swung across the Pride's bow and then come about in a wide circle that allowed it to approach the ship from the rear. Its greater speed had allowed it to catch up easily, and in just moments, the pirates would likely make another attempt at getting aboard. It was up to Anya to stop them. But with what? There was probably a fire hose on this side of the vessel, too, but she couldn't handle one on her own. Like the rest of the crew running around Neptune's Pride, she didn't have a firearm handy, so there was no way she could keep them from getting close to the ship. No, she would have to wait until the pirates were all but aboard the ship, and then take the fight to those she could reach. It wasn't the best of plans, but it was the only one she had. Anya felt the sword materialize in her grip. As always, its presence was reassuring. She peered out through the opening in the door, noticed the patrol boat pull up alongside the Neptune's Pride almost directly opposite her position. The men in the bow of the boat readied their ropes and flung them up and over the side wall of the Pride.
5, 4, 3, 2...
Anya burst out the door, her sword raised high, and headed for the hooks clamped to the Pride's bulkhead. As bullets began to pepper the wall, Anya slashed the rope attached to the first of the grappling hooks. As the man on the first rope fell, Anya raised the sword again. One grappling hook remained. A bullet whipped through the hair hanging alongside Anya's neck. Instinct screamed at her to get down. A hand came over the edge of the outer rail, followed half a second later by a tattooed face framed by long, tangled hair. He sensed motion to his left. Speedy reflexes saved his neck, but not his fingers or the rope. The patrol boat arced away from the Pride, but Anya knew they'd be back. Knowing she could retrieve it in the blink of an eye, Anya released her sword back into the otherwhere.
You! Oh, take that, you pirates!
Marco Sinclair must have succeeded in repelling the pirates boarding from their side of the boat as well. It suddenly struck Anya that they were being attacked by pirates while on an expedition to recover pirate treasure. She wondered how prevalent piracy was in this part of the world. She was used to hearing news reports about pirates operating off the coast of Africa and Indonesia, not Central America. Leaked to the wrong individuals, news of Dr. Knoll's expedition could provide quite a fair bit of incentive for piracy on the high seas. But Anya realized that the pirates may not have known about the expedition to start off with. A ship like the Neptune's Pride was prize enough on its own. Getting a few captives was just a bonus. As the patrol boat neared again, Anya chanced a quick glance over the side. So much for that tactic. She was going to have to find some other vantage point from which to spy on the pirates' activities. Anya rose to a crouch, preparing to try to make a run for a door about 10 yards from her current position. Anya threw herself to the deck and hugged the exterior bulkhead, while glancing wildly about in an attempt to find the gunman. It didn't take long. Behind her, at the far end of the walkway, one of Claire's other hired hands, the steely-eyed one named Reyes, was leaning around the jamb of an open bulkhead door, using a rifle to fire upon the approaching patrol boat.
On the count of three, run for it! I'll cover you!
Anya didn't know him from a hole in the wall.
Is he a good enough shot?
One!
She glanced over the side, saw the patrol boat closing in once more. The pirates stood boldly in the bow, brandishing their weapons.
Two!
She bent down, facing Reyes, still not certain what she was going to do.
Three!
Anya raced for the safety of the door behind her. Reyes stood in the doorway, and for a moment their eyes met. Time seemed to stop as Anya registered the utter coldness in the man's gaze. In the space of that heartbeat, he could have just as easily shifted that rifle barrel a half inch to the left and drilled her right through the skull. Reyes didn't care. It was all the same to him. A pirate dropped out of sight from the railing as Anya raced past Reyes and leapt into the safety of the steel-lined corridor in which he stood. As soon as she passed him, he stepped away from the doorway and threw the bulkhead door shut in front of him.
What are you doing? We need to see what they're up to.
Not here. We'll have a better view and a better chance to mess with them if we go down one level. That will put us near the waterline. We can sink their boats.
It sounded good to Anya, but as she opened her mouth to say so, the deck beneath her feet lurched abruptly, throwing both her and Reyes to the floor. As Anya pushed herself back up on hands and knees, it occurred to her that she didn't hear the thrum of the Pride's engines anymore. Either the pirates had crippled them, or someone up above had shut the engine down. Either way, one thing was certain. They couldn't outrun the pirates now. Reyes led the way, moving quickly through the narrow corridors, trying to get to the far side of the vessel before the pirates could spread out and cut them off. Anya raced along in his wake, ready at any moment to call her sword to hand should she need it. They were hurrying along the last corridor that led to the dive station at the back of the boat, when a door ahead of them suddenly opened and a man stepped out. He was dressed in a torn t-shirt and blue jeans. In his hand was a large bladed knife. Reyes skidded to a halt, bringing the rifle up as he did so. The two men stared at each other. Anya waited for the shot, knowing it would echo in the narrow corridor and give away their position, but thankful that at this distance Reyes couldn't miss. Instead, Reyes lowered his weapon.
Oh, it's Jimenez, from the engine room.
He waved the other man forward and the two clasped hands.
Me alegro de verte.
¿Qué pasa? What have you seen down here?
Spinning around, Anya saw another man enter the passageway through the door at the far end that they'd just used. The newcomer was young, with dreadlocks that spilled down around his lean face. His eyes lit up when he saw them. And he brought the machete in his hands up so Anya could get a good look at it.
We've got company.
Both Reyes and Jimenez turned to look. Anya flattened herself against the corridor wall, giving Reyes a clear shot. Reyes brought the rifle up and sighted down its length. Anya stared, uncomprehending, until Jimenez took a step back, away from Reyes, and the knife in his hand was revealed, dripping blood. Reyes tried to hand her the rifle, but he didn't have the strength. He collapsed forward, falling atop his rifle. Jimenez started walking slowly toward Anya, smiling, knife in hand. With two opponents bearing down on her from opposite directions, Anya needed to eliminate one of the threats as quickly as possible. When Jimenez smiled at her a second time, brandishing his knife, she smiled back.
Okay.
That's for Reyes.
Jimenez stood there for a second, a thin stream of blood slipping free from the side of his mouth. And then his eyes rolled back in his head, and he toppled over backward. Anya dismissed the nearly dead man without another thought and turned to face his partner in crime. Anya slipped into a defensive position. Dreadlock skidded to a stop a few yards away. His gaze flicked to Jimenez and then back to her.
I'm going to kill you for that.
You can try.
Dreadlocks came for her. Anya parried with her sword, conscious of the advantage that the other man's shorter weapon gave him in this small area. Dreadlocks slashed at her, leaving his ribcage open to attack. He managed to twist his body away, but the sword delivered a shallow cut along his ribs. Anya pressed the advantage, jabbing at him with the sword, pushing him farther and farther down the hall. For a split second, she paused, and that was when he made his move. Anya hadn't seen him draw a short knife with his other hand, but his glance downward toward his target gave his strike away. She was ready. Despite his dislocated knee, Dreadlocks pressed another attack. As he drove Anya down the hallway in the other direction, she watched his strikes for a pattern that she could use against him. Finally, she thought she'd found it. Anya's heel struck something on the floor behind her, Reyes' body. Anya blocked the blow with her sword, pinned the machete against the wall, and slammed her left elbow into his face. Dreadlock stumbled back a step, and Anya stabbed him in the throat. Willing her sword back to the otherwhere, Anya stepped over the bodies and slipped through the doorway that Jimenez had used. She found herself in the engine room. It was unusually quiet, the Pride's diesel engine having been stopped. There was no one else about. A large tool locker filled one wall of the room, and she was tempted to hide inside it, but knew that her pursuers would search the room after seeing the dead bodies in the corridor. The tool locker was too obvious. Her gaze fell upon a small maintenance hatch in the wall closest to the outer hull. Anya managed to pry it open and look inside. The hatch led into a very narrow maintenance corridor between the inner bulkheads and the outer hull of the ship. A glance showed her that it ran both forward and aft. She was lucky. Through the steel mesh that made up the surface of the hatch, she saw three pirates burst into the room from the corridor outside.
Ella no ha ido muy lejos. Búscala!
Anya didn't wait around to hear anything more. As quietly as she could, she began to crawl through the shaft. Anya followed the maintenance shaft forward for several minutes. It was slow going. There was just enough space for her to creep along between the pipes and wires. When she thought she had gone far enough, she pushed out another hatch. She didn't see or hear anyone outside, so she stepped out into the hallway. So far, so good.
I'm growing tired of this nonsense, Miss Crete.
Captain Vargas?
Your friends are currently my guests here on the bridge. How long they remain so depends on whether or not you know how to follow orders. Can you do that, Miss Crete? Follow orders? I have no intention of chasing you all around the ship, Crete. You will surrender yourself to the next one of my people that you see and join us here on the bridge in the next 10 minutes, or I'm going to start shooting people, starting with Mrs. Knowles. I trust I've been clear.
Anya wanted to hit the bulkhead in frustration. She had no doubt that Vargas would do exactly what he said he would. His pirates hadn't hesitated to kill Reyes, and she knew he wouldn't hesitate to kill the rest of Claire's team either. Anya knew that Vargas just wanted everyone in one place to make it easier to exterminate them. She would surrender, but only to get close enough to him to stop him from pursuing her team. She'd figure out how when the time came. Anya continued down the corridor in the same direction she'd been going moments before, but didn't worry about trying to be stealthy any longer. She didn't want to get shot by one of Vargas's people. She turned the corner from one corridor to another and found herself face to face with a young guy who had a knife scar bisecting his left cheek and long dark hair pulled back in a ponytail. He stood stock still in front of her, gaping in surprise. And Anya knew she could have taken him out then and there if that had been her objective. It was almost too bad that it wasn't. For a moment, nothing happened. Then Anya shrugged.
Okay, you've got me. I surrender.
The man staggered back several steps and yanked a pistol from the front of his belt. With shaking hands, he pointed it in her direction.
Okay, don't move!
Look, you heard Vargas?
I said don't move!
Anya froze. With that much adrenaline flooding his system, there was no telling what this guy was going to do. He wiped an arm across his face in an attempt to control the sweat that was suddenly pouring down into his eyes.
Okay, good. Bueno, perfecto. Okay, turn around, hands together behind your back.
Anya did as she was asked. Nothing happened, and she was considering looking over her shoulder to see what her would-be captor was doing when she felt coarse rope being tied around her wrists.
El jefe will reward me for this.
After spinning his gun around a few times in self-congratulation, he pulled out a handheld radio.
Capitán, tengo a la mujer.
Trae la aquí.
The guy put his hand between Anya's shoulder blades and gave her a push.
Move!
Anya stumbled forward, but caught herself before she fell. Looking back would just earn her another shove, so she kept her gaze forward and walked down the hall at a steady pace. Behind her, the man followed. Every 10 feet or so, he would reach out and give her another shove. Anya knew he was just doing it because he could, and it was really, truly pissing her off. She wouldn't give the little twerp the satisfaction of knowing that, however. This guy was her ticket to getting close enough to Vargas to turn this thing around. The guy led her past the main deck, where a dozen pirates' bodies lay in the sunlight. Anya smiled, not regretting killing a single one of them. Then they went through a set of doors on the other side of the deck, directly below the bridge. Anya found herself in a small antechamber that led to a final set of doors. Beyond those doors was the stairwell leading directly into the bridge above. If she was going to act, it had to be now. She intentionally slowed down, as if reluctant to continue. And true to form, the guy saw her hesitation as another excuse to lay his hands on her.
No stepping!
As he stepped forward, one arm outstretched to give her a hearty shove, Anya dropped her wrists slightly. The sword appeared in her hands, blade extended upward and back. He walked right into it. Anya turned.
Okay.
The man sagged to the floor as he stared uncomprehendingly at the wound in the left side of his chest. Anya tested the rope that bound her wrists, wondering if she would have to call the sword again and figure out a way to cut herself free. But true to form, the twerp hadn't tied the knot all that well. She tossed the rope into a corner and relieved her erstwhile captor of his pistol. It turned out to be a Browning high-power 9mm, a gun Anya had at least handled before. She checked the magazine and saw that it was about half full. She waited to be certain no one above had heard anything, and then she started up the ladder, intent on taking the ship back from the pirates. As she neared the top of the stairs, she slowed down and let just the top of her head come up over that last step, and only far enough that she could see what was going on in the room ahead of her. She wasn't worried about being seen. The last step was shrouded in darkness and would keep her from being spotted. From her location across the bridge, Anya could see Hugo, Claire, and Marcos lined up on their knees on the floor in front of the main console, their hands tied behind their backs. Both Marcos and Hugo were gagged, but Claire's gag had been pulled down over her chin. A guard stood on either side of the trio. The one on the left, whom she recognized as the first mate, Jenkins, held a rifle, and the one on the right, the ship's navigator, Nelson, was carrying a fireman's axe, of all things. Captain Vargas stood in front of Claire with his back to Anya.
Where is it?
Where's what?
Get her on her feet, Jenkins.
Ow!
I don't know what kind of scam you're trying to run here, but I, for one, have had enough. This will go much easier for you if you tell me what you did with the treasure.
And I told you, I don't have any idea.
Vargas slammed his fist into Claire's stomach. She dropped to her knees.
Get her up again.
As Jenkins bent to do what he'd been told, drawing the gaze of the others in the room, Anya slipped the rest of the way up the ladder. She rushed over to the navigator station, using its bulk to hide her presence. Staying close to the ground, she peered around the edge. Claire stood shakily before Vargas. Even though she was bent over in pain, her expression was hard and defiant. Anya suspected that Vargas could go on hitting her all night long and she wouldn't give up the information he wanted. Apparently, Vargas recognized that as well. He shook his head in mock resignation and then drew an old trench knife from his belt. Vargas made a show of sliding his fingers through the brass knuckles and curling his fingers around the hilt of the old knife.
Now I'm going to ask you one last time to tell me where I can find the treasure. If you tell me what I want to know, I'll keep my hands to myself. But if you don't...
Vargas casually wiped Claire's spit off of his face.
Wrong choice.
He started to pull back his hand, readying another blow, but Anya had seen enough. She slipped out of her hiding place and put the barrel of the gun to the back of Vargas's head.
Move another inch and I'll put a hole through your skull.
The captain froze where he stood, as did the two guards.
Drop the knife, Vargas.
Anya took a step back to give herself room to maneuver and turned her attention to the guards.
Same goes for you two. Drop your weapons and get down on your knees, hands on your heads.
The briefest of glances passed between them as they tossed aside their weapons. As he lowered himself to his knees, Jenkins seemed to slip and put out a hand to steady himself. While everyone looked to Jenkins, Nelson went for the pistol hidden in his belt. Anya adjusted her aim. Jenkins tried to make a move of his own, but was rammed by Marcos. Out of the corner of her eye, Anya saw Vargas climbing to his feet, gripping something long and red in his hands.
Anya, look out!
Anya raised her hand with the pistol and pointed it directly at Vargas. He let the fireman's axe fall to the floor.
Untie her.
Or what?
Or I'll shoot you in the gut and let you die slowly in a pool of your own blood. Not my idea of a good time.
Apparently, Vargas didn't think so either, for he quickly moved to untie Claire, then Hugo, and Marcos. They secured the other two men and Vargas. Once this was done, they dragged Vargas over to the microphone and held it in front of him.
Tell your men to surrender or we'll kill you.
They aren't going to care.
Then for your sake, I suggest you convince them.
After seeing the look on Anya's face, Vargas did just that. In the aftermath of the siege, decisions had to be made. They had been attacked. Men had died. Normally, that would call for some kind of law enforcement investigation. But if Anya, Claire, and the others submitted themselves to an investigation, their chances of finding Dr. Knowles dwindled exponentially with every passing minute, as weather and time destroyed any clues that might have been left behind. Even worse, Dr. Knowles might be in need of medical attention. After a bit of discussion, they decided to maroon the pirates at sea and report their location to the authorities. The pirates were stripped of their weapons, their hands were bound behind their backs, and then they were marched down to the main deck. While they were waiting under the watchful eyes and guns of Claire and Anya, Marcos and Hugo dismantled both the radio and the engines on each of the patrol boats with the help of a couple of handy fire axes. One by one, the pirates were loaded onto the patrol craft. When it was his turn, Vargas couldn't resist getting in the last word.
I will hunt you down for this, Anya Creed. Eres una maldita puta.
How charming. And please do. It will give me an excuse to feed you to the sharks.
When all the pirates were on board, the patrol boats were cut free and set adrift.
Maybe a few days adrift at sea will teach some of the pirates to take up another profession.
Hope that's the last we see of them.
Anya nodded, not trusting herself to reply. Saying that she hoped this was the last that anyone ever saw of them might just give her employer the wrong impression about her. After they were on their way, Claire called and reported their position to the Costa Rican authorities. Hugo had a little experience piloting a vessel the size of the Pride, so that duty went to him. They had several hours still to go before they reached the island, So Claire, Marcos, and Anya took on the task of getting the ship back into shape. Decks were washed, bloodstains hosed away as best they were able, and Reyes' body was wrapped in a tarp and stored in the ship's freezer for proper burial when they returned to the mainland. When they were finished, they ate a communal meal on the bridge with Hugo, and then worked out a shift rotation that would allow them all to get some sleep before they reached the island early the next morning. As Hugo steered the Pride along the shoreline the next morning, the sight of a large yacht in Wafer Bay took Anya by surprise. So much so, in fact, that she had to rub her eyes to be sure she wasn't imagining it. When she checked again, it was still there, bobbing gently in the surf about 20 yards offshore.
That can't be right.
I know. I thought the island was off limits to visitors this season because of the high marine bacteria level.
I think that's the Sea Dancer. Marcos, bring me the binoculars!
The big man quickly emerged from the wheelhouse with the requested binoculars in hand, and Claire used them to study the other vessel as they cruised past the inlet. For a while, she didn't say anything, just stared through the glass at the other boat. But just as it was about to pass from view, she abruptly handed the binoculars to Anya.
I'm right. It is the Sea Dancer. We have to go back. Marcos, tell Hugo to turn to port so we can enter the bay.
What's so important about the Sea Dancer?
It's the ship that brought my husband to the island.
You mean the boat your husband was supposed to call for a pickup if necessary?
The very same.
Anya examined the boat through the binoculars as they approached. Claire was right. She could see the ship's name, Sea Dancer, emblazoned on her side in large letters. It was a sleek yacht that had obviously been retrofitted for exploration work, if the crane jutting out over the stern was any indication. There didn't appear to be anyone aboard, at least no one Anya could see. She scanned the entire ship from stern to bow, but didn't notice any movement. As Hugo brought the Pride about, Anya moved in order to keep the dancer in sight. She hoped to see signs of life, but there was nothing. An uneasy feeling began to settle into her gut.
What are the chances of finding Dr. Null's support ship drifting offshore?
She didn't see any anchor lines, though she supposed they could be on the far side of the vessel, which she couldn't see from her current position.
What do you think it's doing here?
Maybe they picked up another charter while waiting on your husband. It's not all that unusual.
They anchored a dozen yards away from the Sea Dancer and used one of the Pride's two motor launches to approach the other vessel. As they drew closer, Marcos cut the engine and let them drift in, while Anya stood in the bow and tried to hail anyone aboard.
Ahoy, Sea Dancer! Ahoy, Sea Dancer! Anyone home?
Maybe they all went ashore.
Anya didn't really believe it. There was a sense, a feeling of being deserted, and Anya was convinced that when they boarded her, they'd find that she was right. When the boat drifted close enough, Anya jumped from the launch to the deck of the Sea Dancer. A line was tossed over to her, and she quickly tied the two vessels together. Once she had, she was joined on the other boat by Marcos and Claire.
Did your husband say how many crew members were aboard the ship when it dropped him off on the island?
The captain and 4 or 5 others, I think.
Anya nodded. That was about what she'd expected. There should be something here to tell them where they had gone, what might have happened. After all, 5 people don't just vanish into thin air, do they? On the bridge, things were no better. All the ship's systems were up and running, the various consoles glimmering with lights and flashing screens. The radio was intact as well, the dial set for the emergency broadcast station. Though that in itself wasn't a sign that they'd run into trouble, ships routinely left that station on after leaving port, Anya knew, so they could quickly call for help if the need arose. She saw that the anchor was still in its housing, which meant the boat was adrift. Not wanting the vessel to end up beached, Anya triggered the control for the anchor. They split up and searched the entire vessel. Every door was opened, every room entered. They even made a point of checking the closets and cupboards that were big enough to stash a body in order to be as thorough as possible. Anya and Marcos met back on the main deck 15 minutes later.
Anything?
Nope. No one is aboard.
There isn't any indication of where the crew might have gone, either.
The motor launches are still in their moorings at the back of the boat. The scuba tanks are in the dive lockers as well. Five lockers, five tanks.
In here, quick!
Marcos and Anya found Claire in the galley, staring at an object on the tabletop that was partially covered by a piece of tarp. She spun around at their approach, her eyes going wide and her hands coming up defensively before she realized who it was.
That thing, what is it?
Anya cast a quick glance at Marcos, confirming that he was ready to back her up if she needed it, and then crossed to the table. Reaching out with one hand, she drew back the tarp, revealing what lay beneath. It was a mask, crudely made, and by the color of it, fashioned from native gray clay. It was humanoid in shape, with the usual features, eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. But that was where the similarities ended. The features painted on were bright and vibrant, but the eyes were far too big for the face, appearing to bulge wildly at the viewer. The nose was nothing more than a pair of slits between those oversized eyes, giving the face a decidedly simian look. Its mouth sprouted both jagged teeth and two sets of upward-curling tusks, and its ears were large and sticking out from the sides of its neck. Last but not least, two large curving horns jutted from either side of its brow.
Yow.
Anya recognized it, but didn't understand what it was doing here and what it had to do with the Sea Dancer's missing crew. All she knew was that it made her hair stand on end.
What is it?
It's Supai, or at least a representation of him.
Claire and Marco stared at her blankly.
Supai is the Incan god of death. The Inca were active in this area and all the way down the west coast of South America. They had a very vibrant civilization and would probably have continued to flourish if it wasn't for the coming of the conquistadors in the 1500s. Francisco Pizarro had the last Incan emperor strangled in public.
Lovely.
Anya picked up the mask and examined it more closely, looking for something that might indicate where it had come from or who it might belong to.
What does it mean?
It might not mean anything. I don't know how old it is, so I can't say if it's valuable or not. It might just be a souvenir one of the crew picked up during a previous charter.
You don't really believe that, though, do you?
I don't really know. It gives me a bad feeling, but maybe that's just because of what I know about Supai and what he represented.
Which is?
His nickname is Unsavory Death God, so it doesn't take much imagination to think a mask representing his face might be a warning of some kind.
A warning against what?
I have no idea.
Do you think it has something to do with my husband's disappearance?
I don't know. I hope not.
Anya knew it was a warning, could feel it down deep in her bones. But a warning about what?
It was those damn pirates. They probably hit the Dancer in the past couple days, and then towed the boat here for safekeeping. Dump the bodies, wash the decks, and leave the mast to scare off any poachers who might come upon the boat before they could get back to it.
It sounded reasonable until you started to wonder why modern-day pirates would use a 16th-century carving to scare off anyone who came aboard. Without anything to work from, they had no choice but to abandon the Dancer right where she was and head to shore, getting on with the mission that had brought them here in the first place. Chatham Bay, Isla del Coco. If she didn't know any better, Anya might have been seduced by the crescent-shaped beach, with sand so fine it almost seemed man-made, and the dense green canopy of tropical forest rising up from the waterline. She might be lulled into an easy nonchalance that could cause her to overlook something simple, but she had no intention of letting her guard down. As pretty as the island was, it had swallowed Dr. Knowles and his entire expedition without a peep.
Quit your daydreaming and let's get to work.
Anya turned to see Claire with her hands on her hips and an amused expression on her face.
The faster we can get the supply cache taken care of, the quicker we can go looking for Richard. And the treasure.
That was all the incentive Anya needed. As the men were doing what they could to camouflage the area where they'd buried the food and supply cache, Anya and Claire discussed what they knew about the route Richard had taken.
Richard believed the directions that were left behind by John Keating, a friend and confidant of Captain Thompson, were reasonably accurate, and he was using them as a starting point for his own search.
Anya was familiar with the story that Keating and Thompson had met after the captain had somehow managed to elude the British commander who had captured his ship and hung his crew. She was also familiar with the directions themselves.
Follow the coastline of the bay till you find a creek where, at high water mark, you go up a stream that flows inland. After passing the Three Sisters, step out 70 paces west by south, and against the skyline you will see a gap in the hills. From any other point, the gap is invisible. Turn north and walk to a stream. You will see a hole large enough for you to insert your thumb. Thrust in an iron bar, twist it around in the cavity, and behind you will find a door which opens on the treasure.
Very good. Richard memorized all the old accounts as well. He was determined to find the loot of Lima, as he called it.
I can certainly understand that. There's no experience like finding something presumed lost for centuries. It's like a drug, except an archaeologist's high never gets old.
You sound like Richard. He had a pair of zodiacs that his team used to take them upstream. I wasn't able to add any to our inventory, so we'll hike up the stream instead. It will take us longer, but it will also guarantee that we don't miss any signs they might have left in their wake.
It took several minutes for the group to help each other into their heavy backpacks full of supplies, but finally they set out along the shoreline toward the stream mentioned in Keating's journal. Fortunately, they had seen the mouth of the stream while approaching the island. They found the stream within 15 minutes. The river ran reasonably straight and on a heading that was almost due south of Chatham Bay, parallel to them. It was humid and dark beneath the trees, the sunlight all but cut off from reaching the ground by the overlapping carpet of leaves hanging above their heads. In case they ran into some unexpected wildlife, both of the men carried rifles slung over their shoulders. And Anya, of course, had her sword, though she would only use it if absolutely necessary. They had been following the stream along the small game trail for just over an hour when Marco spotted something along the riverbank about 20 yards ahead of them. He adjusted his high-intensity headlamp and stopped.
Look ahead. That big orange thing. What do you think it is?
Oh, I think I know. Come on!
Leaving the trail behind, they waded into the undergrowth as far as they could, then pulled their machetes from their packs. After hiking for a few extra minutes, they finally found what Marcos had seen earlier.
It's what I thought it was, all right.
Anya and company stared at the remains of a pair of bright orange Zodiac watercrafts. Zodiacs were rigid inflatable boats designed to be both durable and portable, making them ideal for expedition work. They could carry several people and a fair degree of supplies, and were useful on anything from shallow jungle rivers like this one to the open ocean. These boats were practically shredded. The many cuts were long and straight, but that told them very little about what had been used to inflict the damage. The motors were both intact and still attached to each boat at the stern. Anya felt her skin crawl. She looked up and down the river and then turned and surveyed the thick jungle behind them. She didn't see anything out of the ordinary, but still, something was making her uneasy. Marcos glanced in the direction she'd been looking and then back at her.
See you something?
No, just on edge, that's all.
What do you think happened?
There's no sign of blood or any personal belongings, so I'd say the boats were abandoned before the damage was done. That's a hopeful sign, Claire.
Yes, you're right. Richard would have said something to me when we spoke on the phone that first night if someone had been hurt. They abandoned the boats to continue overland, looking for the Three Sisters. The damage was probably done afterwards, but let's keep going.
They began to see small signs that people had come this way before them. Riverbank grasses trampled under a heavy boot. Branches of overhanging trees snapped and broken at waist height and above. Even a shoe print left in the soft earth near the waterline. When the bank became too narrow and steep to walk upon, they followed a path where the underbrush had previously been cut through to return to the game trail that they'd been on before. Where the two intersected, a K had been carved into the trunk of a nearby tree.
Claire, look!
Oh, Richard did that!
A K?
For Connells.
Oh!
He probably marked it in case he needed to retrace his steps later, so if his GPS or other equipment failed, he could find the path. Smart.
Keep your eyes peeled for more.